Hello, welcome to Spotlight. A ray of joy peeping out between the clouds of summer.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we speak to a new and already award-winning local playwright, Jenny Derbyshire. Hear about the Year of the Manx Language 2026. Find out what will be happening on the One World Centre stage this Tymal Day, and how local artist Jackie Murray Grace is using her creative flair to highlight awareness of a chronic illness. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you may be involved in planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. That's this programme. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, social media, digital. All the others, you know them, rattle them off if you like. Or make them into an anagram. Drop me a line, Howard Kane at manxradio.com, Kane with an E, or spotlight@manxradio.com if you prefer. I get them both, and I'd love to hear from you, and indeed get back, see if you can get him on the programme. So, if you attend the Easter Festival of Plays this year, if not, why not? Then you might well have seen the wonderful winner, as it turned out, of the one-act festival, Shelter, written and performed by Jenny Derbyshire, along with her partner, Simon Fletcher. It was a two-hander, as we call it. However, not only did the play win the festival, it was also entered by the adjudicator into the Derek Jacobi Playwriting Award Scheme, which it then duly won out of lots of plays entered from around the British Isles. A brilliant achievement for Jenny in her first attempt at writing a play. She came into the studio to tell me more about the award and the play itself.
Shelter is set in World War II. It's one act and it's a two-hander, so there's only a man and a woman in the cast. And it's about a husband and wife who are struggling to communicate after their son, Charlie, goes to war. The man is called Will and the lady is called Mary. And they both have separate reasons for either wanting Charlie to go to war or not wanting Charlie to go to war. So it's about them being sort of forced to communicate because they are in a setting in an Anderson shelter during an air raid. And, you know, where else is a good location for a very heated argument is what I thought. So that's how it came about. The inspiration for Shelter came from knowing that my grandfather was killed in the Second World War, at the end of the war in the Battle of the Bulge. And his brother was killed at the start of the Second World War on the HMS Royal Oak at Scarpa Flow, where there was a heavy loss of life when it was torpedoed. And then I discovered that their father had fought in the First World War. And the idea came to me, how does one psychologically, emotionally accept that they fought in the Great War, the war to end all wars, and then they are faced with a second war where their children have to go and fight? And I feel like that was an area perhaps that hadn't really been looked at. And it intrigued me. So I looked into stories about how this had affected all different types of people. And from doing research and from reading various different first-hand accounts, I was able to put Shelter together. So originally it was two monologues, one for Will and one for Mary, and then I bridged the gap with dialogue. The worst and most difficult part was how to end it. And I spoke to my friend Mary, who was our assistant director, and I asked her what she thought, and she said, write three endings and then choose the best one. So I did that. Well, I say I did that. I thought about it. And then the first one that I wrote was the right one. And I thought, right, that's it. I'm leaving it there. And what was really, I was very appreciative of, was when the National Amateur Drama Festival came back with the summary of what they thought of the play. They said that it just avoided teetering into sentimentality, and I thought that was exactly what I hoped for.
What you were looking for, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And what was it, a lengthy process, the actual, the writing of it?
It's a strange one, really, because I know there are writers and artists and all sorts of people who are able to write or paint, and they're able to do it in one short period of time, but I'm not one of those. I know that I can be very perfectionist, so I told myself, right, we're going to do this bit, and then I keep going and I think, okay, leave it there, come back to it, and then revisit it, edit it. There were very it happened frequently where I came back to it and I thought, oh my goodness, what on earth? So that bit got scrapped or whatever. So it's a process of going back and then, it's a lengthy process. But it took me about 18 months to 2 years to write it and be happy with it. But there was a big gap where I kept thinking, right, how am I going to end it? Should I go back and edit it? And I think that probably happens to all creatives when they look at their own work. They think, OK, I'm not sure about that. Maybe I can edit that. Maybe I can tweak that.
And then, of course, it was entered into the Isle of Man Easter Festival Plays this year in the One Act competition, nominated for 7 awards, including Best Actor, which Simon Fletcher, of course, picked up, and also Best Actress, Best Director, Most Dramatic Moment, Best Costume, Makeup. Like I said, the whole raft of nominations. And then, of course, it went on to win the competition. But then it was the adjudicator who put it forward for the Derek Jacobi Playwriting Award.
Yes. The process is that you have to have put your play forward into a festival that's involved in the National Amateur Drama Festival group. Mm. I'm not entirely sure what that consists of. But you have to put your play forward. The adjudicator has to see it and then they recommend it to be put forward for this award. So Sharon Walker from Madfa got in touch with me and said the adjudicator would recommend that this be put forward for the Derek Jacobi Playwriting Award. And I thought, well, what have I got to lose? Just go for it, see what happens. I wasn't expecting to hear... Well, I was expecting to hear something, but it wasn't as I expected. I was assuming that I would hear from them mid-June, because that's what the email said. But at the beginning of June, I had a voicemail message on my phone from a UK number, and I thought, oh, this is somebody trying to sell me something. And then I thought, okay, well, let's have a listen to it. And she said, you've won first prize. And I sat there for a good few minutes thinking, I'm sure they've got the wrong number. I'm absolutely certain. So I re-listened to it and then I heard the word shelter and I thought, oh, no, they do mean me. Oh, my goodness. And I just sort of floated around the house for, a couple of hours, really. But initially, after the phone call, I went into the living room and I said, Simon, I've won the Derek Jacobi Playwriting Award. And he said, what? I've won the Derek Jacobi Playwriting Award. And he thought, oh my god, you know, and he got up and gave me a hug. It's a moment that I will treasure. It was really very surreal, and I still really haven't come down from it. I haven't got my head around it. I was just so pleased.
Well, you see, it's that usual thing, isn't it? Imposter syndrome. You think, oh, it can't be me. Can't be me.
Yeah, I really had that.
I know. It's always the way. But it is you. So you win. Well, you get a trophy. You get, some cash. But perhaps, depending which way you look at it, or the champagne as well, of course. Don't forget. But you also get a sort of contract, as it were.
I'll be offered a publishing deal, hopefully, from Stage Scripts. That's part of the prize. So get that. And we also get two tickets for the National Amateur Drama Festival, which is at the end of July into August. So Simon and I are travelling over to Bromsgrove to watch all of the what's been described as the cream of the amateur drama of the UK. So I think I'm really excited to see what comes up, whether their level of theatrical skills match the Isle of Man.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got a very high standard over here.
We have, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So if people didn't see it, of course, Easter, and not everyone did, because not everyone can get and all the rest of it, I believe they're going to have another chance to see it on the island later in the year.
Yes, very much penciled in at the moment, but the 7th and 8th of November at Ballacameen, we're hoping to put on what I would describe as a concert, which will involve some choir items, and the first act, if you like, of the concert will be The Perfect Gentleman, which was written by Sharon Walker, who lives on the island. I went to see that play, I think it was 2018, and when I went to see it, I thought it was brilliant, really very poignant, and I went home feeling the emotion of the piece, which I think is really important. So anyway, that's going to be in the first half. And in the second half, we're hoping for more choir items. And then we'll perform Shelter at the end. And maybe we'll have a group singing of We'll Meet Again or something like that, just to lift up the mood, because it is quite a sombre occasion. Mm. But it's a tribute to, you know, remembering and having it remembrance just before Remembrance Weekend. I think that'll be a nice way to lead into Remembrance Sunday.
Terrific. So we look forward to that. I assume at the moment, as you say, that's still in the planning, so we can't, tickets aren't available yet for that. Or
they're not available yet, but maybe you'll bring me back
here
and we can talk about it a bit more.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Anytime. In the meantime, what's next? Because now, I mean, now that you are a playwright, you've got a, you know, you've got a play out there, you've won the Derek Jacobi Award. You know, you've won the play competition over here, of course, at Easter. And whether you think it's imposter syndrome or not, these things are all true. So what's next? I mean, do you feel inspired yet to sort of have a go at doing something else or something different? Or
it's made me think about it a lot more. With doing Shelter, I just thought, well, let's try it, see what happens. And I was not expecting it to get this far at all. So I feel a little bit out of my depth. But
Clearly you have a skill perhaps that you didn't know you had.
Yes, this is it. And I'm quite willing to, you know, I think the main thing is for me, when I started writing Shelter, it was important for me to research it, make sure it was accurate and it was thoroughly plausible. Like a fly on the wall, being in the shelter, giving the audience an opportunity to really be in that situation and really feel the emotions. So I think if I were to do something else, I would probably look into something that I felt very deeply about, that I was willing to do a lot of research on, that I don't mind researching. And I really didn't mind researching because there's so much about the two wars that I didn't know about. So maybe I'll go back into the war sort of theme, but, you know, it opens up a lot of doors and it's given me lots of ideas. So we'll see what happens.
And in the meantime, you know, your own success could be, well, maybe you'll inspire others who think, because like I said, it's your first play. You just had a go. You weren't expecting anything. You've sort of, you know, researched all, did it as a project. And all of a sudden, gosh, yeah, clearly it's something you can do. So as you say, it's a case of, there might be other people listening thinking, oh, I might have a go at that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I never dreamed of. The fact that we were able to put the play on in front of an audience, and that's credit to the Isle of Man and how
and
much
you.
They support. Credit to the Isle of Man and how they support local theatre and how they support local artists. And there was a good audience in for our performance, at least, of the Easter Festival of Plays. And I'd like to say that, you know, go and support your plays predominantly, because I know they get an awful lot of support for musicals, but for plays, there's some real good stuff out there. I would encourage people to write plays, and because I think that might bring more audience people, something new, something different. And obviously you can bring all your friends and family to support you. I had a great deal of support from my team at Goodbye Piccadilly Productions and from everybody who was there in Madfair and everybody who was in the audience. They were all so supportive. So walking out on that stage wasn't too terrifying, actually, in the end, because I thought to myself, there are people out there who want to hear what I've got to say. So anyway, I think that the Isle of Man is a good supportive network for people who want to put new work forward.
What a wonderful achievement it is by Jenny. And as she says there, let's hope it inspires more budding playwrights on the Isle of Man to have a go like she did. You never know where it might end up.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
It's Timble Day on Monday, of course. The 7th, I know it falls at the weekend, and well, you know the rest. It's our national day and a day to celebrate all things Manx, including, of course, our own Manx language. Now, right across the road from Timwald Hill, appropriately enough, is the HQ of Culture Vannin. And it was there that I went recently to hear about not just a day celebrating the Manx language, but an entire year. I'll let Ruth introduce herself with her wonderful title.
Ruth Kegan-Gell, Manx Language Development Officer for Culture Vannin, Ingrainida, the Encourager.
It's great being an encourager, I like that. And we're talking about the Year of the Manx Language next year, 2026. So is this a sort of nationwide celebration?
It is indeed, yes. It will be a full calendar year from the very, very start of January until the end of the year. And anyone can get involved. So it's nationwide across the Isle of Man, but it's also if you live off the island and you'd like to celebrate Manx, maybe there's some ways in which you can get involved.
Is there a sort of specific purpose or target for the year?
Yes, we've got three aims for the year, and those include things like basically building up the advocacy for the Manx language, so helping people understand why it's such an important part of the fabric of the Isle of Man and what it can give to us, and also helping increase the numbers of Manx speakers and people learning the Manx language, and also cultivating creativity as well through different things that will be happening through the year. And community.
Why 2026? Any specific reasons?
Well, it's the midpoint of the 10-year Manx language strategy. So this is the second joint Manx language strategy that GBN, the Manx Language Network, have created. And it runs for 10 years. And 2026 is the halfway point. So it feels like a nice time to boost things in the language. It also coincides with a number of cultural anniversaries. We've got a big anniversary for the Bunskal Gilgach. And we've got an anniversary for Njavega, which is the educational charity based in St. John's that run a nursery. We've got, it's 40 years since the Heritage Year, in fact, as well, 1986.
Get away.
I know. And various other ones, actually. It's quite a lot of anniversaries. And it's really funny, isn't it? Because we were thinking 2026, midway for the strategy, lovely point to do it. And then we started looking in and it fell on lots and lots of anniversaries. So it was almost like a sign.
Actually encouraged. Do you see more active use of Manx generally across the island?
I do, yes, absolutely. There's more and more people wanting to learn Manx, and there are people using Manx, things like business names, for example. Kishcha Che, for example, in Port Erin, which literally means hot box, which is the sauna, the beach sauna.
You've got,
yeah, I know. Keru, which is Keru Brewery in Port Erin, that means quarter. People might know that from like place names like Keru Mua, Quarterlands, things like that as well. Probably to do with quarter, I would imagine, measures of beer, but I'm not really sure. I must ask them. And you hear it more and see it more in signage around the island. Definitely, I think there's a massive increased interest, certainly since when I was a child. It's growing in popularity all the time.
And what do you think's driving this? Because I'm always intrigued that if someone obviously has Manx ancestry, you could see them trying to get in contact with their cultural heritage and such like. But often it's people who don't have long Manx links, and yet they're still encouraged. What do you think is the driver for a lot of these people?
I think it's a mixture of both things, actually. I think you get people who've always lived here all their life and they're coming to learn the Manx language. I've certainly got people in their 70s who've started to learn with me. One of them's my mum, for example. She never learnt Manx and she started learning with me. And then you've got people who've moved over to the island. And I think all of these different people have different reasons for learning. Some of them might find that it's really great to learn a language from a brain point of view. It's a really great thing for your brain to learn something like music or a language. I mean, obviously, don't need to tell you the benefits of music and things. But also connecting with the island. So whether you've been here all your life or you're just new to the island, it can help you get a better understanding of the island because it is woven into so many things. It's in our folklore, our history, our place names, our tales. It's in so, so much. That is not to say, because sometimes people say to me, you know, I'm not no less Manx because I don't speak Manx. Nobody's saying that. I just think it gives a richness and another side to things that you get from speaking and learning Manx. Certainly I feel, and I'm a second language Manx speaker, I didn't learn it as a child, I didn't grow up speaking it, I learned it as an adult, but I just feel happy, I feel peaceful, and it's my preferred language to speak in. So I know what value it can give to people for well-being as well. There's all sorts of reasons why learning a language, Manx or otherwise, is an amazing thing to do.
And what drew you to the language? You're saying that it's a second language, so what drew you to want to learn it?
Well, I studied music at university, so I went to University of York, and when I was away, I developed tendonitis in my left wrist, and I'd been a pianist and a flautist, first study flautist, in fact, and I wasn't able to play the flute because of this tendonitis, and I turned to singing, and I started learning Scottish Gaelic songs. I was going up to Glasgow, I got a grant from my university, and I was starting to learn Scottish Gaelic songs. And I thought, why am I not learning Manx songs? So I started learning Manx songs. Then I decided I love these, but I want to be able to understand what I'm singing. I don't want to just form the words with my mouth. I want to really really get into the nitty gritty and understand them. So through music, but also through place names, because place names always around you. And I think my interest had been sparked a little bit when I studied translations by Brian Friel for A-Level English with Rosie Cool, my teacher at Castle Rushen. And we were looking at the parallels, you know, you could really see between Irish Gaelic place names being put into English, as that play is all about, in the 1800s, and then what happened in the Isle of Man, and that sparked an interest too. So yeah, music and place names were my catalyst. And I started in earnest when I'd done a PGCE in teaching and I taught in secondary. And when I sort of moved on from that, I started learning. So it would have been early mid-20s when I started my journey.
No doubt we'll hear more as we get closer to 2026, halfway through the year already, of course. Plenty of events, no doubt, and happenings coming up. If people want to find out more sort of in the months going forward, where do they go?
They can go to yearofmanx.im, and we'd really love for people to get involved however they can. So whether that's supporting events coming along to them, and maybe they want to put on their own events as well, we've got lots of ways people can get involved, and maybe they want to contribute something, whether that's their time or help support an event with a small grant or whatever. But we'd love to hear from people. So yearofmanx.im.
Whilst there's a formal side to proceedings on Tymwald Day, of course, and a celebration of Manxness, there are also opportunities to celebrate the multicultural side of Manx life and the island's part in what is a global village. And no better place to celebrate this on the day than at the One World Centre stage in the Global Village, as the One World Centre's Wendy Shimon told me.
Yeah, so we'll be running a Global Village event down in the Arboretum, which is down behind the main Fairfield at St John's. So this is our annual celebration where we try and include all the different cultures and nationalities in the Isle of Man in the celebrations for Manx National Day. So we'll have all the usual bits and bobs going on, lots of stalls, lots of charities, cultural groups down there, but we will again have our stage with some performers on, and we try and get a good selection of music from around the world.
Give us a taste of who's there this year.
Okay, so this year, confirmed so far, and it's always subject to change.
Always
subject to extra things popping up as well, but at this point in the...
It's an organic schedule.
Fluid. but at the moment, we're expecting Loose Crew, which is sort of a blues group, Clash 4, which is Dave McLean from Peel, his band.
Yeah,
and
great.
I have to give a shout out for Dave McLean, because he helps us with amplification on the day, and we wouldn't be able to do it without him. So thanks so much, David, for helping us for many years now. We've got Roger Slight with the didgeridoos, which
Fantastic.
Is always a highlight. So he brings down a selection. You would think, you know, a didgeridoo is a didgeridoo, but apparently not. There are lots of different varieties of them. So he does a great explanation of why they're different and the tones that they play as well. This year, quite excited, we've got Samba Man coming back. We haven't seen them for quite a few years. So they'll be doing some drumming. And then a couple of those will stay on stage and provide some other Brazilian music. I'm not quite sure what that will be at the moment, but that's a new one again this year, so looking forward to that. And then we've got the Mulug Band, who always come along and help rouse the crowd at the end. At the moment, we're finishing with Rhythm of Bulgaria, which is that fantastic dance group of local Bulgarian dancers. It's always a really lively end, and they get the audience involved as well. So it's looking like a really nice schedule, actually.
And it's wonderful, isn't it, in his case of the day itself. Of course, Tymwald Day is a day, a Manx day, and about the day about the Manx nation and the Manx people. But it's great to have this stage here where there's a celebration of all the different cultures, some of which you've mentioned there, from right around the globe.
Absolutely. You know, we are a multicultural, or at least a more multicultural nation now than we probably ever have been. And we can't forget that. Although we're all very proudly Manx and it is their national day, we are connected to the rest of the world. And so it's really nice to be able to draw in all these other influences and cultures as well.
So there's no charge, you can go there. What time does it kick off?
So the event starts, the Global Village starts at 10, but the music gets underway sort of about 11:30, 11:45, and runs through till about 4.
A bit of a great Samba Man. Great to hear they're back again there. Sounds great lineup as always, doesn't it? Don't miss Roger Slight and his didges, or sticks, as we didge players call them. Now, we spoke to multiverse artist Jackie Marie Grace last week about the premiere of a short film of her gothic folk horror performance poem On Raven's Day Hill. The premiere was last night at the Mananan Festival at the Erin Arts Centre. A great success, I believe, and sold out, I think. But while she was in the studio, Jackie spoke openly about ongoing health issues she has to deal with and how she's been using her creative side to deal with this and try to raise awareness of the issue via a short publication she brought in. A couple of wonderful little books, which I've got in front of me here now. Badly Behaved Ableism, brought to you by Without Wings, the Manx Autoimmune Trust. Tell us a little bit about these books then, because these are sort of works you've done yourself. I take it you've designed, written them, put the whole thing together yourself, have you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have. So I've been running I established a charity, Without Wings, in 2016 to help people with autoimmune arthritis. We're now the Manx Autoimmune Trust. And we basically raise awareness, information and compassionate funds for people who are struggling, often people who are going through diagnosis. Recently, we piloted a few groups, wellbeing groups, which have been brilliantly received. We've used adapted yoga, chair yoga, soundology. We've also used expressive movement, which has been, that was amazing actually. So we're hoping to continue that in the autumn and do another year's worth. We're just seeing we've got funding. So on basically with the ableism booklets, I have noticed, so the last year and a half I've been on crutches because I've been quite ill with the illness, and I've had the illness for 12 years and it's been tough. So basically, there's been a lot of talk recently about the healthcare funding conversation mm-hmm. rather within government and different strategies for addressing this. And I just felt with that, there was some clashing of how things were going about, and there was an undercurrent of ableism. I was starting to hear ableism comments and conversations about various things. I experienced to a lesser degree on an everyday basis. People aren't too bad. People are generally great, to be honest, and they're very helpful when you're obviously struggling with mobility. But you do sometimes get questioned, which is not appropriate. And especially within like the health context, you find, and especially within the environment of people talking about private care, an assumption that you can afford various things when possibly you can't. And I just felt it was time to bring it into the limelight. So I was basically not so well recently and spent a few days in bed, and I was fairly wound up with this issue. And I'd done a series of 8 social media posts that I was preparing to put onto Facebook for the charity. And I just thought, as I was doing them and as I was researching them, and I was basing everything on science, I thought this is a way in, because we can't understand any kind of unconscious bias. We don't get it unless it's brought into awareness. That's what you have to do. So I was thinking of how I could explain it in a way that wasn't, blaming anybody, because it's nobody's fault when people have unconscious bias. And I thought, well, we'll look at the science of it. We'll do it in a fun way. So I was, and as I was researching, I was finding out stuff about my unconscious bias, and I was finding out stuff about certain labels that would be very useful, I thought, for people to understand that this is what's happening. This is why when somebody speaks to you in a certain way, it feels uncomfortable and doesn't feel right. And this is what's going on in your brain when that happens as well. So that's how I've created the whole book. It's about the science behind how the brain processes pain, how the brain compartmentalizes what it sees for ease of understanding and processing, because we can't process everything all at once. And it's about bringing it into people's awareness.
As you say, it's a wonderful, it's colourful, it's got, you know, it's an easy read. It's not something that you think, oh Lord, it looks sort of foreboding or it's not going to be easy to look at. It's lots of information, lots of colour, lovely sort of a bird flying through it as well, and these various challenges, as you say, look at one system you use today, a workplace or a shop or a clinic, who might it unintentionally leave out, or practising deep listening and such like. I suppose the main thing is, where can people find them? They'd like to sort of find out more and have one of these to hand to, as you say, get a steer on this.
Yeah, we haven't had loads of copies printed because we're hoping to get it online at some mm-hmm. point. We were mindful, obviously, of like getting lots of, from an energy point of view, environmental point of view, sorry. So basically, we printed some up and then we sent them out. So all the GP surgeries should have them. I think we sent them to various hospital departments. We've sent them to the libraries. However, if people want them, we're asking people really, if people want them, to get them to share around or to get them for workplaces. So we're just being mindful of how many copies we send out. But it's from support@withoutwings.co.uk if you'd like a copy for your workplace or an institution that you use. And it's free. Everything's free.
I'm sure Jackie never sleeps. They're beautifully produced little booklets and an interesting read. That address again, support@withoutwings.co.uk, if you want to ask for a copy for your workplace or organisation. That's about it for now. I'll be back same time next week. I'll see you then. Be good. Enjoy Timble Day and whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hey, Mo.